What's going on, everybody? It's your boy, or it's just me, John Middlecoff, 3 and Out Podcast. Combine week. I went last year. I just wasn't able to go this year. I'll go next year. We'll go in every other year with the 3 and Out Podcast. That will be maybe my game plan. A lot going on. I mean, a lot going on. I had like three topics. I'm recording this on Thursday. I had three topics with Eli Manning, with just Kyler Murray, and just in general, reaching on guys in the combine and how different teams evaluate on Wednesday. Then this morning, Jason Witten returns to the Cowboys. I have a theory on what really happened. If you follow me on Twitter, follow me on Instagram. We do the Middlecoff mailbag at the end of every podcast, so you can slide up in those DMs. I answer questions. I got a million questions. I'll probably have to answer some of you just manually over DMs, but you can find me at John Middlecoff everywhere. We're going to get into all of that. But the big news of the day was actually baseball news. It was Bryce Harper signed a contract for 13 years and $330 million. And I say it all the time, and part of it, I think, is I've never, I worked in the management side, but I saw things that happened on the management side I didn't necessarily agree on. And I'm not anti-player, even though most of my takes would be anti-player if you were a player viewing what my thoughts, or you listen to me talk. I think some of it is driven because so much of social media, and I probably spend an unhealthy amount of time on there, drives me to just take the opposite stance because it pisses me off when I see the groupthink. But I understand both sides, and I'm a believer. I have no problem with paying good players. I would have paid Khalil Mack $90 million and don't even flinch. But when you see a deal, and free agency is not that far away, and the one thing that I don't think people quite realize, because the combine is technically a draft event, it's when all the GMs and all the coaches and the scouting staffs get to meet, especially all the underclassmen. They've met a lot of the seniors at the Senior Bowl. But it's really the start of free agency. Now, football, unlike baseball and basketball, guys don't really hit free agency often because of the franchise tag. But let's just say they did. Because I've been thinking a lot about it ever since really Manny Machado signed the 10-year deals, or deal with the Padres, I think it was last week. Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network, which actually he has a big week coming up. He's taken over from Mike Mayock. I'm personally indebted to him. I took over the West when he left NFL Network, and he's been a big advocate of mine in the media. I'm a big DJ fan. I'm glad he's getting this shot. Should be fun. I can't wait. I've got all the combine DVR if I can't catch it live. But who would you give a 13-year deal with just in life? Yeah, I mean, how many people get married and feel 100% confident? Now, I've never been married, been to a lot of weddings, feels like they're pretty confident on a wedding day. 13 years is a long time. 13 years ago, I was a junior in college. Now, in the NFL, even Patrick Mahomes, when Patrick Mahomes becomes a free agent, he's got a 4-year deal, he's already going into year 3, and then he's got the 5th-year option. So Patrick Mahomes, I think he's like 23 years old. So in a couple years, he'd be 25. I wouldn't feel comfortable giving Patrick Mahomes a 10-year deal, let alone 13 years. And I think it really is crazy when you see these deals, the difference between the NFL and basketball, and especially baseball. And the one problem for football players and just that camp, the agent camp, the union camp, and I'm not... anti them. The game, you need players to play a game. So they are important. I've never disputed that. And the top players, drive the bus. Just like in the tax system, right? 15% of people pay 85% of the taxes, or whatever the exact number is. Brady, Manning, the Max, those type, the Gronks, those type players carry the NFL from a marketing standpoint and just an interest standpoint. But you need special teamers, you need kickers, you need backup running backs to function. I just don't. The problem for NFL players just in this fight for more money is always going to be, because of the nature of the sport, there's just a huge injury element that is just not there in the other sports. Think about a couple weeks ago now when Zion got hurt. It was kind of a freak deal. I mean, his shoe blew up. But to play basketball, to even train for basketball, what do? You play basketball. In baseball, you don't really do, you know, if you're going to play a baseball game, what do they do in spring training? They don't like simulate practice. They practice for like 4 days. Then they just start playing games. In basketball and in baseball, you just play. You can just play the sport. In football, practice is so much different than games. You really have a smaller segment at the end of practices when you go one-on-one and actually go 11-on-11. And you could argue, and I would imagine NFL people would tell you, because of the rules now, you can't really do that. When I first started working in college football in 08 at Fresno State, we had back-to-back double days for, I think, 2 weeks. And we would scrimmage every other day. So you would, in training camp, and I, in the history of the league, I remember when I got to the NFL, and Deuce Daly would look at me and tell me, God, camp is so much easier. We used to scrimmage. You don't really scrimmage anymore. So the only time you play in football is in games, right? Is the 16 games. And part bits and pieces, depending on who your coach is, in the preseason. So it's so unique, and injuries are so prevalent that the contracts, this next CBA with football, the players are probably going to get a, you would think, a little more cash, but you will never, ever sniff the guaranteed money in the years at these other sports just because it's not really possible. The majority of deals, if you could ever sign a 10-year deal in the NFL, would be absolute disasters, even if it was the best players. Think in the last 10 years, how many players, if you would have signed to a 10-year deal, you'd actually feel that good about. It's a pretty small list. For the most part, if you look back over the history of the league, the last like 30, 40 years, and you just factored in once a guy was 4 or 5 years in the league, who you would give a 10-year deal to, it would basically be only Hall of Famers. And even then, some of them, a lot of guys in the Hall of Fame had a solid 10 or 11 years, so you would get terrible the last 3 or 4 years of the deal. Like Jason Taylor, who I wasn't a big fan of when he went to the Hall of Fame. But when you looked at his resume, he played for like 17 years or whatever, or Ray Lewis. Those guys are really even outliers in the Hall of Fame crew, non-quarterbacks. So it really is fascinating. I wouldn't give 13 years if I was a record label to like Lady Gaga, let alone a player, a Bryce Harper. That is crazy. And I would imagine that we will never, ever see anything close to probably 10 years in the NFL. It's just been on the top of my head, and I think it's just fascinating element to the business of football. Okay, let's get into the other big story. I'm not exactly sure of the time. I'd have to go check the Cowboys' tweets when it officially happened. But when it happened, I think like all of you, I was shocked. And this isn't the healthiest way to live. I wish it wasn't like this, but I'm pretty cynical and pessimistic of any announcement, just in America, let alone with sports. If you announce something, I immediately red flag it. I'm like, I'm going to look into there. I'm not, you know, tinfoil on my head, conspiracy theory guy, though I do have theories. And when I actually just got a text from my buddy Scotty Raber, and he says, and I thought he nails this, doesn't Witten completely unprovoked saying, and he said this in a statement, this was completely my decision and ESPN definitely didn't force me out. What I'm talking about here is Jason Witten has been re-signed by the Cowboys. He's unretiring and he is now the starting tight end or backup tight end, a tight end for the Cowboys. And he's left Monday Night Football. My first reaction was the same thing. When you go out of your way, first, when I saw the news, I said ESPN was going to fire him. He was not going to be back. That was my first reaction. And then, and I already saw this quote, but my guy Scotty nails it. Like, doesn't him unprovoked saying that? This isn't a press conference. You're putting out a statement, pretty much mean that's what happened? Yeah. My theory is 100% ESPN was not going to have him back on Monday Night Football. Now, could they economically fire him? Would they move him around, put him on countdown? I don't know what their game plan was, but he was not going to be calling Monday Night Football games anymore. I don't think you got to be tinfoil on your head, super negative, pessimistic guy to come to that conclusion. Because I think, first off, Monday Night Football, I'm going to watch football games no matter what. One, I love it. Two, it's how I pay my mortgage. Three, it just, I want to tweet about it. And I just, yeah, back to one, I really like watching football games. Like most people listen to this podcast. We're going to watch Monday Night Football regardless. What Gruden, what John Madden, what Tony Romo's doing now, it brings in the casual guy. They're really fun. And when you have Nash, people hate on Collinsworth on social media. And he's not as important because you got Al Michaels. I mean, Al Michaels is a rock star. He's been in anyone's life, if you're an older person, for a long time. He's a big deal. He brings the casual fan in. Monday Night Football is a standalone game. You can't have a guy that has zero personality. They got pretty lucky with John Gruden. Do you know who didn't like John Gruden after a while? Football people. Because they're like, oh, he doesn't say anything. And I'd throw my hand up. I was like, God, you know, Gruden will never crush anyone. You know who liked John Gruden? My mom. The casual dude you'll see at the store that doesn't really like football. Most people that just casually watch like him. That's good for business. Because you know what? The football people that don't like John Gruden are going to watch Monday Night Football no matter what. You couldn't roll Jason Witten back. It was over. He was terrible. He was not good. He's not a media guy. Not everyone is meant for the media. Just because you're a former player does not mean you're going to be a good media member. You have to have a personality if I give you a microphone. Unless you are just so, you know, famous. And even then, it's been proven. Emmitt Smith, Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, a little bit before my time. I don't vividly remember, but you can YouTube, was bad. I've always read stories. Bill Walsh wasn't that great. Some guys are good. Some guys are bad. Usually naturals that just have a big gregarious personality, you have to kind of come off to. Because if you're a 10-plus year vet and you get into the NFL, you're not like normal people. You were a millionaire in your 20s. You led a really, really difficult, physically demanding lifestyle. Your life has just been unique. You don't relate to that many people. John Gruden woke up every day at like 3:30 in the morning. He relates to nobody. But on TV, he came off very relatable. Same with John Madden. John Madden was making $8 million a year. You go to the Ringer article, and when Fox got the NFL, gave him $8 million in 1993. $8 million is a lot now. It's 2019. Imagine 25 years ago to call a game. He was the least relatable human on television. How many television personalities, besides like Johnny Carson, like Jay Leno, were making $8 million on TV? John Madden, and he was the most relatable guy on television. Jason Witten wasn't. He didn't have a great personality. That's part of the problem. Great guy. Tony Romo's best friend. Be the guy I want, be my neighbor. Guy I'd want to like teach my son how to block. But I just don't want him entertaining me on Monday night. My Monday night, I don't claim to have a tough job. I talk and write and YouTube. Actually, just started a YouTube channel. Go subscribe. John Middlecoff on YouTube. I actually didn't just start. It's been started a long time ago, but it's up and running now. And I go live there every day. But I want to be entertained, and that's a huge part of Monday Night Football. And you can take Jason Witten at face value and believe what he said, and the Cowboys would clearly never throw him under the bus. My other part of this theory is I think Jerry kind of threw him a lifeline. Now, it does make sense from a football perspective. They have a young team to get him around all their younger players for leadership in a big make-or-break year for Jason Garrett. But I'll go to my grave thinking ESPN was going to fire him / reassign him. And it was over on Monday in a prideful, winning, you know, he's a winner. That's what Jason Witten is. He's a winning, he's a high-level, not a Hall of Famer, but you know, the Hall of really good. He's the type of guy you want on your team. You know, didn't want to be a part of the public shaming, even though he had been getting destroyed on social media forever. But it was over at ESPN. I've never been married, but I've known a lot of people that have gotten divorces. I have consistently dated since high school. Been in several, I wouldn't necessarily call them serious relationships. They might. I've dated monogamous people, one person. but every single one, because again, I'm still unmarried, there has come a point in time when I was hanging out with that other person, that female, that I realized that I was not going to marry him. So the moment I realized that, our ability to, you know, we were a ticking time bomb. It was going to end. And that happens with me. I want to meet someone, spend the rest of my life with. But, you know, you play the cards you're dealt, you know. I've met people, dated, have fun. I'm open-minded to it, but just haven't met the person. And every time, I know. And there's either a moment, you know, a period of moments, a series of things that happen, whatever, where you're just like, yeah, I'm probably not going to marry him. And some people that have been married would probably tell you you kind of know early. But I've also heard from other people that are happily married that it took, you know, some time. Not that you don't like the person right away, but you're like, I can spend the rest of my life with this person. But again, I think once you know, the healthiest thing to do, like once you know you're not going to marry the person, is probably to break up. Now, we know that's not usually how it happens. You continue to hang out with them for whatever reason. We usually know the main one. And it eventually ends. But when you know, you know. And I think you see the Eli Manning and the Giants, he was the right guy for them to marry. And their highs were incredibly high. But it's time for a divorce. If we related them and paralleled it to a relationship, they were like Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. I'm pretty sure they never got married. Like, their highs were high. They won a couple Super Bowls. It was incredible. But it's time. For the Giants and Pat Shurmur even said, Eli's good. It's not all Eli's fault. We want Eli back. Dave Gettleman didn't quite ring the same endorsement. But clearly the ownership with the New York Giants is smitten for Eli because of what he did for him. And they just can't forget it. But I got news for him. Guys, the first Super Bowl was 07. The second one was 2011. It's 2019. He can't move. He is a statue. And he's not a very good player anymore. We all love Eli. I personally bet on him twice. Made a combined like $4,000. And the first, I think it was like $1,800 or whatever, $1,400, $1,500. Back in 07 is the equivalent of a lot of money now for me, relative to what I had. So Eli, I was personally invested in Eli. I believed in Eli. And then when I worked in the league and had to play him in New York, well, he never felt like he played that well against us in Philly. I respected him because of what his ability, like him going on the road and winning that 49er game, their highs were high. I would understand being in love with Eli, the sports equivalent, if I'm the Giants. But it's over. And we've known for a couple years. And listen, I've been in situations where I've known it's over, but she's so good looking and she's fun. And it's just, what are you going to do? You know, dump her on the spot. So I don't even blame the Giants for holding on. I kind of do last year because they should have taken Sam Darnold. But I 100% will blame them if they hold on an extra year. Like, you knew, you definitely knew last year, but for some reason you held out hope. Then he showed you again, he's not good enough to carry you. Now, you could argue he's never really been, but when he peaked, he was awesome. But it's time. It's 2019. Draft a freaking quarterback. Whether you got to trade up with the 49ers to get one of these two guys, whether you got to, I don't know, trade for Josh Rosen, do something. You cannot, I repeat, cannot have Eli Manning as your starting quarterback next year. And if I was a Giants fan, if I was an Eagles or a Cowboys fan, I'd be licking my lips because it kind of feels like Eli Manning might be the starting quarterback next year. But the Giants have to come to grips, look themselves in the mirror, and they can't keep holding on to this relationship. They can get out financially. They don't owe him anything anymore emotionally. Like, they already kind of screwed him a couple years ago with McAdoo and the streak. Like, that ended, and then they kind of felt bad, and they overcompensated, and they spent an extra year and a half with them. It's ugly. Like, the only way you can get back to relevancy is with another quarterback. So whether that's a guy that's already in the league, Josh Rosen, go sign Nick Foles, I don't know. I'm not claiming to have the solution, but I 100%, and this is not, you don't need to be Bill Walsh to figure this out, know the solution is not to continue to be in this business relationship with having Eli Manning be your starting quarterback. So go trade for Rosen, sign Foles, draft Haskins, trade up for Murray. I don't care what you do, but you got to do something. When you know, you know. And I get, they knew, and they still held on. But there was, you know, maybe one excuse last year. Like, oh, Saquon's a generational player. There's no excuse now. Eli stinks. It's over. Just come to grips with it, Giants. Someone asked me a good question on the Middlecoff mailbag. And before I started doing the podcast, I'm like, you know what? I'll use this kind of as a topic because I do think a lot of people are unsure of this. Football has been using analytics forever. I know analytics is the sexy new term on social media and the way we talk about sports, and it's overwhelming in baseball. Basketball's somewhere in the middle, and football's trying to catch up. But that's what the combine is. Height, weight, speed, hand size. Like, they really value numbers. Old school guys. Like, the old school organizations. The Giants. I think Michael Lombardi, former general manager, tweeted this. It might have been Greg Gabriel. One of the former NFL guys on Twitter. It might have been Greg Gabriel. He worked for the Giants forever. Worked for the Bears forever. So the Giants are not going to draft Kyler Murray. They have size requirements. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. And the premise of the question on the Middlecoff mailbag was, how do teams evaluate players at the combine? You know, how do they rate different guys? And my answer is pretty simple. Like, probably any company, you look for different things, for different people. You know, obviously in football, different schemes dictate who you want. Some teams care more about size. I know some GMs don't care about size. Andy Reid and Brett Veach, they have had so much success with smaller players, they do not care. DeSean Jackson, Tyreek Hill, they will go with a smaller player high, or a premium player with a smaller guy. The Bengals typically don't. They are usually, and had been, when they were really humming kind of in the heyday of Andy Dalton and Marvin Lewis, the second go-round with Andy Dalton and that team that was super loaded. They acquired all those picks from trading Carson Palmer. Size. What happened? They went against the grain because a guy ran a 4.3 240, and the rumor came out this week they're looking to trade John Ross. Now, I know their general manager, I think his name's Dick Tobin, vehemently shot that down, called it fake news. But I think he'd tell you, we went against what we stand for. We typically draft A.J. Green, Tyler Eifert. I mean, big. We like big size. And the Bengals are a team. The AFC North in general has been consistently pretty big. But John Schneider, he doesn't care. He's kind of from that Andy Reid. I think those Green Bay Packer guys, because they were just around kind of a unique thing with the Packers in the mid-90s. Now, granted, they had some really big players. I mean, Brett wasn't huge, but Reggie White, Gilbert Brown, Dorsey Levins, like they had some, you know, they weren't tiny. But for whatever reason, and the Packers have always been like this, they like height, weight, and speed, and just speed in general. I mean, Al Davis forever, you know, the running joke, and it sucks that he's not around on Twitter, because when someone runs fast, you would know they'd want him, or he'd want him. And there aren't as many teams like that anymore. But certain teams value and grade you based on starters on their own team. Like, I've always heard the Patriots base it on, are you better than my starting right guard? Doesn't matter where you fall in the draft or whatever. That's up to Belichick to figure out value. If you go into, let's just say you go into Cal tomorrow, or Texas, and they have a starting right guard, you grade him not based on the league. You know, is he going to be an all-pro? Is he better than our guy? Would he be a start? Would he be a backup? Would he be a practice squad guy? And every team's kind of different. Now, some of these teams, because they have so much carryover of, you know, GMs from one place, like all the Green Bay guys, somewhat think alike. All the Belichick guys have a similar system to do it. The Giants guys forever, that's where Belichick started, you know, have a similar system. So, the guys, Joe Douglas that now runs personnel for Howie, he brought that Raven system, and the Ozzie Newsome guys forever kind of spread around the league. So there are, to me, 6 or 7 general ideas that are different between groups of teams. But I think teams would ideally, Kyler's an exception because he's such an elite player. I think it's becoming pretty clear, and maybe it's just because of the combine, but he measured in at 5'10". He has big enough hands. His tape speaks for itself. It's incredible. I saw Brett Veach on today with Andrew Siciliano on the NFL Network. I text him. I said, Veach, you look skinny. He looked good. But he dropped a quote. And to me, this means something. Because last year, Brett Veach said something. He said, Patrick Mahomes, the best player I've ever evaluated. And Mahomes, I mean, that was Veach's guy. He said, Kyler Murray makes Mahomes-esque throws. So to me, that's not getting thrown around cavalierly. Like, that's a guy that loved Mahomes since college, drafted Mahomes, and has built his franchise around Mahomes. So him throwing that out there isn't like the other GMs. That means something. And as someone said on Twitter, oh, he's just trying to hype him up, you know, to make a player fall. Which you can argue sometimes in the draft. The Chiefs are drafting 29th. Kyler Murray is a lock, I mean a lock, top 10 player, let alone probably top 5 player. So he's not worried about that. He's not worried about Kyler Murray going before pick 29. That's going to happen. But I think when you do the John Rosses, and this is why we made a big deal, Jonah Williams, the many consider one of the best tackles in this draft, had short arms. And I saw Joe Staley, the 49ers left tackle, tweeted out. They said the same thing about me. And Joe Staley did have shorter arms. My rebuttal would be, Joe, you were an elite athlete for your position. So if you're going to have a characteristic or a quality at the combine, short arms, slow, you better balance that out with doing something great. Joe, you were one of the best tackle athletes we've ever seen. One. Two, you were not considered a top 10 pick. You went at the end of the first round. So the reason we make a big deal of these measurements, because they matter. I've stood next to Jason Peters. There's a reason they talk about reach in boxing and fighting. Because if I can hit you and you can't hit me, more than likely I have a chance to win. Jason Peters, Tyron Smith of the Cowboys, the tackles, arm length does matter. Now, can you overcome it? For sure. Again, Joe Staley overcame it by being a top-notch athlete. Can you overcome size? Would Kyler Murray be Kyler Murray if his athletic ability was Tom Brady-like? Of course not. The reason he's such an elite prospect is because he's an elite athlete, and he throws the ball really well. But it's a combination of that. If he was 5'10 and was a statue, we wouldn't be talking about him going number one. But if he was 6'4, we would be talking about who's going number two, because it'd be a lock who's going number one. So these numbers, these stats, and the NFL has been in the analytics business forever, does matter. So back to the basics of this question was, how do teams judge these guys? And the answer is, not trying to be, you know, not answer your question directly, but it's just, it differs team to team. And every team views it a little differently. And let's call it what it is. You do get emotional. It's easy to say, I'm not emotional. Really, one GM is the best at that, Belichick. Other teams fall in love with players. You'll see a guy and you're going to really want him. And that's happening right now. That's the fun part of the combine. You get a guy, you meet a guy, you're like, God, I like that guy. I love his tape. Then you watch him work out. You're like, God, I love his workout. It's natural, right? You're just going to like certain guys more than others. You might have a guy on your draft board. Let's say you rank the top 50 players. You may like the guy at 20 more than you like the guy at 4. That's happening all over the league. You like guys that aren't necessarily the top guy on your draft board. Your favorite player in the draft may be a dude you can get at the end of the first round. That may be the guy you super like, right? For whatever reason, super like. I don't even know if that makes sense, but you get my drift. So this is I'm looking forward to the combine. My guy Daniel Jeremiah, the reason I got the West Coast job with the Eagles was because he went to NFL Network, and he was a big reason having my back and helping me campaign for the job, and we've been friends ever since. And he's been a big, I mean, I've admired him from afar. Not afar, I mean, he lives in California too, but I just mean, like, as his career's gone, he's always helped me out. And when I got fired with the Eagles, he tried to help me get a job with the NFL Network writing on NFL.com, and he's been awesome. So I really look forward to watching DJ. You know, he's a great balance of being fun and knowing his shit. So the combine, it should be a fun weekend. Okay, I'm going to get to the Middle Cough mailbag. I have so many DMs, I'm probably not going to answer them all. So some of them, I'll probably just respond to you manually if you don't get on the podcast. Some of them I'll just save for next week, but I'd imagine we'll have so many over the weekend because of the combine. The combine basically is a made-for-TV event. You know, it's when Kyler weighed in today and he was 207, I got a lot of texts like, does he run later today? First thing in the morning? No, he runs Saturday. So the quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, D-linemen, linebackers, corners, safeties, all Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So it by the time that my new podcast comes out next Tuesday, the combine will be over and we'll have a pretty good idea. Some dudes that jumped off the screen, some crazy things probably going to happen. But if I don't get to your question, I apologize. Appreciate everyone getting to this. We're going to keep doing it. And I respond to a lot of people just manually, so if I don't get to you here with my words, I'll text with you on DMs. Do the Jets follow a recent trend of the second-year first-draft quarterbacks making the playoffs? It's a good question. I would say that is a pretty good question. Last, I think, podcast, or maybe a couple podcasts ago, I asked, who had the brighter future, the Bills or the Jets? I like the Bills' infrastructure. Just Sean McDermott's proven he can make the playoffs. Now, so is Adam Gase. But he works well with his general manager, which he basically brought from Carolina in Bean. My problem with the Jets is just their cohesion. They already had some issues with the coaching staff. They haven't even got to OTAs yet. Is Gase going to listen to the GM? I'm a big Sam Darnold guy. I believe in Sam Darnold. I think he's going to be a star. So if I was just going to bet on one of the two teams, you would bet on the Jets just because I think he's vastly superior to Josh Allen. Though, if you follow Carson Palmer's brother, Jordan, that works with all these guys, Sam Darnold and Josh Allen, who, you know, one of the reasons that people love Josh, despite his film sucking, was he was because a great kid. Well, Sam's a high character. They're like best friends. I'm rooting for Josh Allen, even though I did not like him as a prospect. He's the type of kid you root for in life, regardless of what you do, let alone when you're a quarterback. He's the type of guy you want to see succeed. He's a high-level good guy. So Jets playoffs this year, it feels like it'd be a pretty big stretch just based on they got a long way to go. I saw Adam Gase says they're going to run a 3-4 defense. Greg Williams has consistently been a 4-3 guy, so there's going to be some transition there. Though the talent, I don't know. I would bet against the Jets making the playoffs next year. I would actually say if somehow Josh Allen can take a step, I kind of like the Bills. With the Colts cap room and 4 draft picks in the top 60, would you consider trying to get a defensive free agent to help? Maybe someone like Landon Collins or Clayton Gathers walks this offseason? Let me see. If Clayton Gathers walks this offseason, I follow you. Yeah, to me, the Landon Collins thing, the key is, are you comfortable with his limitations? He's not a cover guy. He's basically like the new age hybrid linebacker. He can get exposed in space. Now, if you can use him like Cam Chancellor, and a couple years ago with the Giants when they had that unreal defense and they had the good cover corners and Janoris Jenkins was balling, then you'd be in pretty good shape. But if you expect him to be something he's not, when you buy players in free agency, they're not like the draft. You can't expect them to change. Now, Landon Collins is still relatively young. I would imagine he's 26, 25 years old because he came out early. Remember, he was the guy that when he committed to Alabama, his mom was pissed off because he was from Louisiana. He was supposed to go to LSU. I like Landon Collins. I just think my defensive coach would have to know and be comfortable with what he's good at. So, yeah, I don't mind it. I would just have to know that my coaching staff and Eberflus are okay with it. Now, the Colts, to me, their offense is going to be good because Luck elevates guys. Their offensive line clearly took a big step. Eric Ebron looks like a really good player. T.Y. is still really good. I would imagine they'll draft a quarter or draft a wide receiver, you know, to go with Doyle's coming back from injury. So they got some weapons. Kind of under the radar, no one really talks about it. They'll be fine. It's defense, defense, defense. If their defense plays well, because look at in the division. I almost called him Deshaun Jackson. Deshaun Watson is excellent. But that team, you know, is a big-time defensive team. Their front's awesome. They've had pretty good corners over the years in the Texans. The Titans' defense has been very, very solid. The Jacksonville fell off a cliff this year, but, I mean, when they were really good 2 years ago, they were awesome on defense. So being good on defense in that division does matter. Even in Peyton Manning's heyday, when their defense wasn't great statistically, what did they do really well? They rushed the passer. So they just have to improve. They don't have the blue chippers. That was the one thing when Peyton Manning in his heyday, Dallas Clark, Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison, Pierre Garçon, Austin Colley. They had so many guys cycling through the running backs. Adai, starting with Edgerrin James. They were Rhodes was a good player. I thought he could have won the MVP of that Super Bowl. But they offensive weaponry, when you have Peyton and then Luck, is not going to be the problem because those guys are going to make guys better. It's just defense. You got to get some blue chippers. So whether it's signing them, Landon Collins, I wouldn't be opposed to. Another Colts question. The Colts are young and talented and on their way back. I guess this is kind of what I just talked about, but the premise of this question is, are they legitimate Super Bowl contenders in years to come? I don't know how you would say anything otherwise. They have, when he's right, you know, beside maybe Mahomes, you know, of anyone 31 or 32 or younger, the best quarterback in the league in Luck. With the offensive line being good, when you have a player of Luck's caliber and your offensive line is good, how are you going to lose? You know what's crazy when you look back at the Colts in their heyday with Manning? Their offensive line was never that good. Howard Mudd was such a good offensive line coach, and I worked with him for a year, maybe it was two in Philly. Dude was like a mad scientist for an old guy. It's just so good at getting random undrafted free agents to overachieve. Say what you want about the Patriots, they have consistently had some pretty good offensive linemen over the years. I mean, their offensive line this year was excellent, was really, really good. They traded for Trent Brown, who a year ago, I went to Denver Broncos and 49ers to joint practice. Von Miller, who was just coming off 2 years ago, the Super Bowl MVP, called Trent Brown the best right tackle in the NFL. So that's just the random guy they replaced our first rounder with. Tom Brady had played on dramatically better offensive lines. So my point is that if your offensive line's good and you have a guy of Luck's caliber, you're going to be in the Super Bowl mix. Now, is Frank Reich, you know, Bill Belichick? No. But the division is a little harder. The division is hard. The AFC South is good. The Texans are good. I think Bill O'Brien's good. You know, the Jaguars, let's just say they're the worst team. And then the Titans are solid. Again, I don't know if the Titans are ever going to be a 13-12 type win team, but they'll be in that 8-10 range. And if Mariota can just stay on the field, they are a pain in the ass to deal with. So them getting there is going to be impressive. It's going to be hard. But yeah, I think if they have a good offseason, have a good draft, they'll be right in the mix. Okay, firstly, with the release of Crabtree and John Brown a free agent, please tell me Baltimore will find a true young number one receiver for Lamar. If so, who is this guy? Secondly, I've heard it a million times. Lamar Jackson needs to improve on his passing ability. Do you really think he can become a consistent 250 passing yards per game guy? Does he have it? Let's start there. 250 yards a game. I would imagine if we check the averages, I don't want to do it because it'll slow us down, but if you're averaging 250 yards a game, even if you're a runner, that's pretty low. Now, if you're an explosive passer slash runner, if you check Kaepernick's in Pete Kaepernick, he was not throwing that many games for 300 plus. It would be between 250 and 300, but he also had a rushing touchdown. And two of his passes would be deep bombs. So if you have explosive plays, which Kaepernick was fantastic, the 1 year with RG3 was fantastic, you can get by. Russell Wilson back in the day, they hit some big plays. Right now, Lamar, I mean, they're running the triple option. So who are they, you know, who's going to be their number one option? Could they draft a wide receiver in the first round? I guess that would be an option. You check out the free agents, they aren't really there. Crabtree clearly was not a great mix. Having been around Crabtree a little bit and just watched his career closely, I can't imagine he didn't like playing with Kaepernick. No chance he liked playing with Lamar Jackson. And at $7 million, it didn't make any sense. To me, and I've heard people, some rumble about this, would it make sense to just go all in on the run game? Get like Le'Veon Bell and just run the triple option or whatever the hell you call that offense with Le'Veon Bell, and then maybe draft a running back in the mid rounds too, while also drafting, I don't know, DK Metcalf or N'Keal Harry or whatever in the first round. Because their first round pick, they were a playoff team, so it's not like they're drafting in the top 10. But they missed right on the last receiver they took. So you got to nail this one. This is a big draft. Ozzie Newsome, consultant now, not actually the GM. I'm not a Lamar believer. Just because I think the strides he has to make are just so long and so wide. He's got so far to go. It's not like, you know what, he just got to work on the mechanics a little bit. He's just naturally not a very accurate guy. Not only not accurate, he's not really close. Just the basic stuff. And I'm not Bill Walsh or Mike Holmgren or Belichick. I'm not sure that stuff can be taught, man. I'm really not. What do the Packers do with Nick Perry? He's not worth $12.5 million and can never stay healthy. But the Packers are weak at outside linebacker. Do they cut him and let him walk? Or do they just ask him to take a pay cut? I think you ask him to take a pay cut immediately. I would guess, I haven't read anything, but they kind of insinuated it at the end of the season. Clay Matthews is probably done. Now, could he come back at a super, super cheap number? That's always on the table. You can't pay Nick Perry $12.5 million. But he is pretty talented. You did draft him once upon a time really high. Could you try to justify him taking a big pay cut? I think the problem with the pay cut guys for just talented players, that even if they're often injured, Ziggy Ansah, a little different story than Nick Perry. But you get what I'm saying? There's so much money on the free agent market, you'd be like, yeah, I'm not taking a pay cut. Cut me. I'll get paid. I'll get overpaid. So if I'm a player that has any resume, when the guy says take a pay cut, or he tells my representative that over the next couple days of the combine or in the next week leading up to free agency, and I have a resume, I say no. I say cut me because I'll make it back easily on the free agent market. There's just too many. There's too many teams with money, and they're not enough good players. So the Nick Perrys, the whoever's, Kelechi Osemele's one with the Raiders. He's owed like $10 million next year. You can't pay him that. But if they ask him to take a pay cut to six, he's just like, okay, cut me. Someone will give me at least 2 years, $20 million. I think that's going to be a lot of a problem for any smart agent. Call their bluff because there is just too much cash on the open market to get your client. God, I'd be a pretty good agent. I got another Colts question. See if it's any different than what I already asked. What are the chances he's traded this season's second round pick? Ballard says he's blown away by the offer. Think a second round pick would do. Okay, let me reread this. What are the chances he's traded this offseason for, say, we all know. I think you left out the player that he's traded for a second round pick. You mean T.Y.? You just said, what are the chances he's traded? I don't know who he is, but resend me the question and I'll try to answer it. I know guys like Chris Ballard, they value draft picks. Just look at last year. He went from 3 to 6. One of the best trades. It was clear it was a good trade at the time of the trade. Looked way better when he got Darius Leonard. And I didn't like Quentin Nelson. Not as a player, but at number 6 overall. But if you're going to be an all-pro, shut me up. you shut up all the haters and say, you take a guard at 6? Yeah, I do, when he's the best guard in the league. Then what are you going to say? As a Patriot fan that lives in Pittsburgh, kind of tough, it's always interesting for me to contrast the two organizations. The Patriots are low on talent, Brady notwithstanding, but incredibly high on accountability and discipline, while the Steelers are high on talent and low on accountability and discipline. This is a deep question. In your opinion, is talent or accountability / discipline more important in generating championship teams? Is there some middle ground there? And why are teams chasing the next Sean McVay rather than the next Bill Belichick? Well, Bill Belichick's an all-time outlier. I think it's really that simple. He is just a unique coach. I don't necessarily think the Patriots get this kind of reputation for overachievers, and they do consistently have some overachievers. They've also had some Hall of Famers on some really good teams. I mean, Randy Moss, Hall of Famer. He never won a Super Bowl. Logan Mankins, borderline Hall of Famer. Again, never won a Super Bowl, but they had some pretty good players when they were kicking ass. Let's just view this group of players. Brady, greatest quarterback ever. Gronk, first ballot Hall of Famer. I'll argue with anyone on that one. Defensively, Belichick's just so good, and they really haven't been that good on defense, over the last 5 or 6 years with Patricia. This year they were good, but they really, 2 years ago when they lost to the Eagles, they got sliced and diced. Edelman, he's not a Hall of Famer, but he's a damn good player. They have a great kicker. They're always coached up at the highest level. You can win a championship with Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Big Ben and Juju and all those guys. To me, their problem has always, it was never offense. Remember the game we watched 2 years ago against the Jacksonville Jaguars? They couldn't stop anyone. To me, it's just fundamentals, and in big games, the difference between Belichick and the Steelers is they just get stops. Just schemat when they really have to, they can get off the field. To me, that's been the difference of the two teams. Pittsburgh, if they would have been consistent on defense in playoff games, someone's blowing me up, in playoff games, and just get off the field, they would have won that Jacksonville game. There was a moment that sticks out in my mind. I remember sitting on my couch. They were making this crazy comeback. Ben hits a couple sweet shots to Antonio Brown. They couldn't get a stop to save their life. And the Patriots, and sometimes in the Super Bowl, I can live with not getting a stop in the Super Bowl. But I can't live with not getting a stop in the second round of the playoffs. Because to me, over the last 5 or 6 years, and it came to a head 2 years ago when they played each other, and Tomlin was, to me, pumping out his chest 2 years ago was ridiculous. When Tomlin was like, yeah, we're already looking forward to them, and then they ended up losing in the second round of the Jacksonville Jaguars. To me, that was a big difference. So you do need talent to win. You need elite players to win. And you need overachievers. You need a team to win. But you also need high-level schematics in the biggest moments. Because everyone in the playoffs have good players. And I think sometimes the Patriots get undersold a little bit on that. I mean, Gilmore was a first-team All-Pro this year. First-team All-Pro. Devin McCourty is a damn good player. Hightower, really good player. Trey Flowers, good player. I mean, they got good players and a first-team All-Pro. So I don't think the gap is quite as wide as, and I'm guilty of this too, as we just casually talk about, oh, the Steelers, man, the last couple years. No, they just, the game where Jesse James got, you know, whatever they called the incomplete, that was a freakish loss. But does anyone believe in a big game in Pittsburgh or New England that Tomlin's out coaching Belichick? Like, I do believe that Big Ben, when he's on, could beat any quarterback in the history of the NFL. I do not believe, though, that Tomlin and his staff on defense, when it really comes to nut-cutting time, back in their heyday when Tomlin was winning big 7, 8 years ago, didn't they have that guy named Dick LeBeau? Felt like they could get off the field. And it doesn't, that, to me, that's the difference. And if Belichick would have taken the reins from Patricia a couple years ago, maybe they would have had, how many championships would that have been in a row? 3? Because they went Atlanta, lost to Philly, and then they just won this one. So they won 2 in 3 years. They could have easily won 3 straight. They could have had on their resume 3 straight and another 3 in 4 years. It'd be like the Warriors meet the Lakers. I got a lot of questions here. It feels like, you know, when you're doing a school project, you're like, you know, I'll just bang out all the reading. And then you get to page 20, and you're like, oh my God, I got to read 150 pages tonight, and I'm only on 20? How am I going to do this? Well, John Middlecoff, the student, would usually just quit. I just wouldn't do it. Maybe go to Cliff Notes. But if I say I'm going to do the DMs, I'm going to do them. Hey, quick question. Is LeBron starting to remind you of Aaron Rodgers? The bad attitude feels like he's got a foot out the door. Yeah, the LeBron-Aaron Rodgers comparisons to me are a little different. I think Aaron's weird. You know, I think he's just a different cat. But I also think that football means a lot to him. And he plays really hard. And he's a good teammate when the game's going on. LeBron's at the point now where he's not even trying. Now, LeBron has 3 championships. Aaron's got 1. And the other thing is, Aaron, I got a new iPad and I don't know how to silence the buzzer. Part of Aaron's legacy, if you're going to be known as the most talented quarterback ever, and he's kind of got this Elway vibe, like he's just one of the freak talents of all time. Well, at the end of the day, Elway got to 5 Super Bowls and won 2. Like, Aaron, you're not sniffing that right now. You've been to 1, buddy. 1. These next 3 or 4 years for Aaron Rodgers, I can't even put Aaron Rodgers, and LeBron's wearing me out, but I can't even put them in the same sentence right now. Aaron's got to do something. He's got to really do something these next 4 or 5 years. And it might shitty for him that he's got this coach that might be over his head. Now, a couple years ago, I won't forget it. He was awesome. What was that? Dak's rookie year when they won 2 straight playoff games. They ran into Atlanta and their defense was bad. That was an impressive year. I think Aaron's a top 6 or 7 quarterback ever. But he should be right behind Brady, right in that mix. If he can win another championship, I do think we'd talk about him like Elway. Though, how's he going to win that other championship? I don't know. This is a crazy long question. I'm going to have to get to this one later. Aside from your Odell Beckham trade scenario you discussed on Haberman, that's my other podcast, Haberman and Milkoff, check it out, iTunes, which I didn't like at first, but I'm now on board with, would you pay big money for Trey Flowers if New England lets him walk? This question is in regards to the 49ers. I'd have to really study Trey Flowers as a player, but when I've watched, and I've watched New England a lot, but I'm not locked in on him, To me, I don't know if he's a great scheme fit. The 4-3, they already have, you know, with Buckner and Solomon Thomas, they need a true, true edge guy. You know, a twitchy, fast, explosive. I don't know if that's Trey Flowers. To me, he's more of a hybrid 3-4 guy. And he's a good player. But for the 49ers, see, I don't know, especially what he's going to cost because he's played at such a high level. He's been in so many big games. He's going to command pretty big money. When I think Trey Flowers, I do not think a 49ers fit. But again, I'd have to go and really study him or text someone in the league, and maybe I'll do that this weekend, about like what his fit is. But to me, the 49ers, what they are looking for, I watched John Lynch's press conference today. He's like, we got Buckner, and Solomon Thomas is going to play more inside. We got inside bodies. We need an edge rusher. We need a Bosa. We need a Josh Allen. That's why they try to trade for Khalil Mack. We need that. We got inside pressure. Now, Trey Flowers is a edge rusher, but I need a guy that can bend the edge, is a speed rusher. I mean, ideally, a Von Miller type. Now, that's, of course, ideally, Von freaking Miller. But they do have the second overall pick. So either Josh Allen or Bosa, one of those two guys got to be the guy. With our top, the Falcons question for you. Okay, I like it. With our top need being an elite edge rusher, a lot of people need edge rushers. And I thought John Lynch, I saw him with Colin today. He had a good point. He's like, I'm saying I need an edge rusher. Every team needs an edge rusher. When I played in the NFL and won a Super Bowl, we had Simeon Rice and Warren Sapp. Now, Warren Sapp's not an edge rusher, but just rushers. People want defensive linemen. You can never have enough defensive linemen, ever. With Adrian Claiborne, with the loss of Adrian Claiborne, do you see any chance we trade up from 14 to be able to draft Josh Allen from UK? He's tall, athletic, gets after the quarterback, and can cover. I think he would be a perfect fit in DQ's system. Agree. It would be almost the equivalent if somehow he fell to 4 or 5, you trade up from 14, kind of the equivalent of what the Saints did last year. Different numbers, obviously. You'd be going from 14 to like 5. They went from mid-20s, I think, to 14 with the Packers. But they thought Marcus Davenport was the missing piece. Turned out he wasn't. But that's what I'm trying to parallel those situations. The more I think about it, and I'm interested to watch this guy work out, I think Josh Allen might go too to the 49ers. Read a story about him. Actually, it might have been a tweet. I read more tweets than I do stories. And the tweet was, he could have gone pro last year. He was like a fringe, you know, probably early second round pick, but he had a kid and he stayed at Kentucky. He came back to school. Well, what did he do this year? 17 sacks. He's a can't miss potential top 5 pick. And he's a high character guy. Like, I'm telling you right now, just knowing the way the Niners think, I think the 49ers are more likely to take Josh Allen than they are Bosa, if they're both sitting there too, because Kyler Murray or Haskins goes one. That's my guess right now. That's my way too early prediction, that the 49ers take Josh Allen over Bosa. You heard it here first. That's my bold prediction as we sit here February 28th. So when's the draft? Usually 27, 28th of April. We're about 2 months away. So 2 months to go. I think Josh Allen goes too. So I like your idea. I don't think he makes it past the second pick. Let's find some questions. A little hey, how are you from a babe? Okay, last one. Big fan of the podcast and a Seahawks fan. I was wondering if the NFL has any rules of stopping Shaquem Griffin from using a prosthetic hand, especially with the technological advances in robotic prosthetics. This is a deep question. Or would this be considered of having an unfair advantage? That's a hell of a question that I don't have a great answer to. I just, my gut reaction, if they made the technology that made it the equivalent of a normal hand, you know, not like RoboCop or Terminator, basically like a like super strong hand where he could just grab people and pull down, I think you'd have to entertain it. If it was just the equivalent, you'd have the power. But if I was him, I'd want a hand that was extra powerful. So if I grabbed you, you just couldn't break it. And I don't know how they would regulate that. Again, I know nothing about this, and I'm the wrong guy to ask. My gut reaction when I just read your question first would be no. That they would just, they would not want to do that. So that would be my first reaction. But in fairness to him, he's, yeah, hell, he carved out a career without a hand. That's pretty incredible. I think it's fair to say. Thanks for listening, everyone. Another Middlecoff mailbag. I'm going to start answering all you guys' questions. Thanks for everything. Thanks for listening. And I'll be back Tuesday, and we'll break down. I got it all DVR'd. Can't wait. Combine, and then a little more combine.